Now, Ireland is very good at getting vaccines out to patients. We're told 95% are administered within a week of arrival here. However, getting vaccines and supplies of vaccines into the country, well, that's a whole other story. The latest setbacks mean the March target of 1.24 million vaccines will not be met, and that figure had already been revised downward from 1.7 million. The government still says 80% of people will be vaccinated by June. Taoiseach Micheál Martin yesterday admitted his frustration about how the full level of vaccines promised to Ireland had yet to arrive. Our reporter Fiacra O'Kiona has been speaking to people in Dublin city centre about this vaccine rollout.
I feel we're going too slow. I kind of feel like we were fooled to a certain extent, and I'm not sure whether to kind of look towards the Irish government for that or whether it's something from the EU. I don't see how we can improve at this stage, but maybe if they can locate vaccines in other countries that are spare, just to speed this up.
Do you have any idea when you might receive the vaccine?
Somebody said to me it might be October at this rate. Like, I'm 60, so it's going to be quite a ways away yet, I think, you know.
You're down from Belfast and working in Dublin city centre. What's your view of it on both sides of the border?
I'm in Dublin 2 or 3 days a week. I've already had my first jab about 2 weeks ago, due my second in the first week in May. The north is considerably further on than the south. Maybe they're dependent on the EU too much, you know, to get the vaccines.
The sooner people get vaccinated, the better. I mean, I do realise, I think we're pretty much on average in relation to Europe at the moment, but obviously the quicker we get it, the better.
I have a lot of elderly relatives. People would rather know if their vaccine is delayed. There's a dignified response that everyone's entitled to.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's going ridiculously slowly. It's not going fast at all.
That was Fiacra O'Kiona reporting there. Dr. Colm Henry, Chief Clinical Officer of the HSE, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mary.
And there's no doubt there's positives. You know, we've heard the figures for hospital and ICU numbers are going down. The COVID positive numbers are going in the right direction. And we've had those low positivity rates now in nursing homes and among healthcare staff. But isn't it very disheartening for people? They abide by the lockdown, their lives are suspended, and they do feel they're being let down by this slow pace of vaccination.
Well, it is frustrating. We want to get the vaccine out to as many people as possible. There are two, when you look broadly at a vaccination programme, Mary, the first objective is, and this vaccine programme, although unprecedented in terms of its scale and complexity, is no different than any other vaccine programme. The first objective is to reduce serious illness, hospitalisation and death due to COVID-19 in this particular case. And of course, the ultimate aspiration of the vaccination programme here internationally is to achieve what we hope we can achieve, although it's by no means certain, which is called herd immunity, where we have a significant proportion of the population covered. So while it's disappointing in terms of the secured stocks coming into this country, what we're seeing is is the impact of the vaccination programme to date on those who are most vulnerable, those who stand to lose most should they catch COVID-19. And we're beginning to see real impacts in this country in nursing home settings, residential care settings, and of course in hospitals among healthcare workers. We're seeing collapsing rates of a level far beyond what would be explained by falling community transmission. For example, hospital healthcare workers, in the week ending January the 17th, we had 1,000 people positive with COVID, and in the most recent week for measurement ending February 28th, we saw that collapse down to 45. And similarly, we're seeing the disappearance of COVID-19, almost disappearance of COVID-19 as a serious illness in nursing home residents, making them safer as well.
And there is no doubt that that is absolutely wonderful. But even among nursing homes, and we spoke to both the son of a woman in a nursing home and a nursing home owner earlier, and without a mass vaccine rollout, they're still worried, even with those low positivity rates, about opening up nursing homes to visits. They're still worried about the implications of that. And you can see why, can't you?
Yes, and of course they're right to be worried, because as long as there's COVID circulating in society to the levels it is now, we're still seeing, remember, we're still coming out of the third and biggest surge to date in this country, and we're still seeing daily cases of the order of 500. So there's a lot of it out there still. But the evidence, particularly for nursing homes, is very strong in terms of reduced serious illness, hospitalisation and death. And that's coming through not just from this country, but from countries which are further further down, which have further experienced vaccination rollouts, such as Israel, Scotland, elsewhere, we're seeing real benefits in terms of the most serious manifestation of illness among those who were targeted first by the vaccine. And they're the people to whom we're directing the vaccine, what stocks we get now, namely not just nursing home residents, but now those who are over 70, who are well underway now.
And that's what we want. We want more of that. But are we going to have to, given that we've been let down by AstraZeneca, we're being let down by Johnson & Johnson, the game changer one jab vaccine, we're going to be let down sometime into the second quarter for deliveries of Johnson & Johnson. Do you need to look at other issues? Do we need to look at perhaps extending the time between the first and second vaccination of the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines?
Well, it's important to remind ourselves that vaccines are but one part of a public health response to this pandemic, and a very significant part. As I said, the evidence increasing day on day from other countries is showing great protection beyond what was predicted in some cases in the trials, particularly for the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is showing real world evidence, as we call it, which is really quite substantial. So, but it is only one part of our overall public health response. As for the distance between, or the gap between the vaccine doses, we have chosen with the AstraZeneca vaccine to choose a 12-week gap, which is the longer in the range, the recommended range. And we did that based on the medical evidence that there's a bigger kick from the second immunity should there be a longer gap between the first and second dose. It will be up to NIAC, of course, based on evolving evidence, whether we can prolong the distance between the gap between the first and second for the mRNA vaccines. At this point in time, they're 28 days. We are seeing substantial evidence internationally that there's quite a degree of protection even after that first dose. And but as to whether or not that will lead to a rescheduling of that, we just have to wait and see.
But given the pressure on supply and given the evidence you're pointing to, should we revisit it and revisit it quickly?
Well, all the evidence has to be reviewed as we go through, and that's what's happened. And we've seen, for example, in the recent week or two, a reprioritisation of that allocation list based on an evolving awareness of the risk to particular disease groupings. So we will, of course, and I expect NIAC will continuously review the evidence, not just in Ireland but internationally, as to what the most effective and safe way of rolling out the vaccine is, and that will include, of course, vaccine scheduling.
Okay, I want to talk about a couple of other issues with you as well. This whole question of antigen testing, the report is due, I think, this month from Professor Mark Ferguson. Could this testing be deployed, for example, in schools? And we've seen numbers this morning on over 29,000 under 18-year-olds who were infected with COVID in the year to March.
Well, Mark Ferguson's report will address the issue of the deployment of antigen testing in asymptomatic testing. At this point in time, we are using the antigen test in outbreak settings for providing antigens to hospitals, also through the Department of Agriculture to meat factories, but it's been deployed as part of an overall outbreak response. The use of antigen testing and asymptomatic testing is slightly more difficult and more complicated, because we know the test is most sensitive when it's used in symptomatic individuals at a certain point in time after their exposure to the virus. Its sensitivity in asymptomatic individuals, including children or staff in schools, is much lower. And as such, its deployment there is really dependent on the level of disease there, whether or not it's an outbreak setting and so on. There are some advantages to antigen testing. We know that it picks up, it's a rapid test, but that the trade-off is its lower sensitivity, particularly in patients without or people without symptoms. And as such, people may act or behave on the basis of result, on the basis of a false reassurance rather than accuracy.
But arising from whatever we hear from Professor Ferguson and his report, could it be an important tool for the continuing of education, particularly given that, the vaccination rollout is slow and will be slow at least into the second half of the second quarter?
Well, that's up to Professor Ferguson and his group, but I would say that you mentioned the word tool. It is part, whatever role it has is part of an overall response, and the most significant response is that overall public health assessment when cases arise in school, assessing the case, assessing the number of contacts, determining whether or not more mass testing is required, and the results to date, even as schools reopen, are more reassuring, showing lower levels in schools and out in the community, reinforcing reinforcing that message and that evidence we have that schools are not significant areas for transmission into the community, and that significant outbreaks in schools are relatively uncommon. So whatever role it will have, it will be part of an overall response and certainly not in isolation.
Okay, what about, we've talked about supply of vaccines into the country, but the HSE has had its own issues in relation to the distribution of vaccines to GPs. Have they been addressed now?
Yes, if we look at the rollout to the over 70s, and again to emphasise the impact here, the great majority of deaths and serious illness are in the over 70s, hence the prioritisation for this group and hence our focus there. We had originally planned, Mary, for a rollout of the more user-friendly, if you like, AstraZeneca vaccine in these over 70s. And of course, it was determined by NIAC, and we accepted this fully, that we would roll out the mRNA vaccine, a much more tricky, precious and fussy vaccine in every sense of the word, in its transport requirements, in its reconstitution, its delivery and its storage. And there were some problems, of course, with some practices in the third week of the three-week rollout to over 85s. We learned a lot from those, yes. And we're working closely with the GP practices to resolve those and make sure this doesn't happen again as we go down through the age groups to cover all those over 70 and afford them the greatest possible protection.
All right, Dr. Colm Henry of the HSE, thank you for your time this morning. 23 minutes past 8.